Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I am joined by my co-host, a man... Oh, wow, that's playing, so hope everybody could hear that. A man who once took third at F&M, Mason Clark.
You know, I take first a lot more, buddy, but I'll take it.
We need picks or it didn't happen.
I'll go to my little DCI thingy, and I'll show you the little badge it gives you. They give you little, like, icon thingies.
You know who Mason really is, though? He's the guy that has the wrong screen on us right now with the wrong logos.
You know what really happened is those aren't there in, like, 2 seconds, and I forgot with the three people. There you go. It's all right.
We are joined, however, by Pro Tour competitor, GP Top 8 competitor, and Bronze Pro, Matthew the Mage Kling.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Wait, Matt, the Witch Kling? I don't even remember.
Witch Kling, yeah.
Well, there we go. Witch Kling. Witch Kling is you. Guys, I'm very excited to have Matt back. I hope I've expressed that. Matt will be returning to the podcast for good, which we're really excited about. Returning this to kind of a three-person format. So much so that we even invited Mason on because, you know, Michael couldn't make it. So with that being said... He got a haircut?
No, you have to have that M quota. 2 M's per cast.
Oh, okay. I thought you said he got a haircut. All right.
No.
Well, this podcast is starting off great, but it's going to get super great because we need to talk about the Pro Tour that Matt Kling attended and that was dominated by a certain 3-mana creature. Before we do that, though, we just want to remind you that if you want to pick up some awesome 3-mana creatures, you can do it at our sponsored Oasis Games. You can check them out at mtgoasis.com and get 15% off of your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout. And you can get 4% off of every order by using the code WouldThatBeGood. And yes, guys.
I just really like to say that I love those segues every week. Just great.
Are they great?
They are great, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm a master. I don't know what to tell you. You know who else is a master is our other sponsor at at the Mana Base. You can check out their sponsor at Fusion Gaming. You know, you can watch Negachu the Mason Slayer, which Mason thinks he gets to call himself the Spencer Slayer because of a certain thing that happened this week.
That sounds like a spoiler.
But hashtag. But he's not. He's not.
Let it be known that I had planned to say that, but I was going to wait till the episode was up.
I next leveled you, bro.
I like it.
I next leveled you.
All your thunder.
Getting ahead of the news. It's smart.
You can also check out the other podcasts on this network by going to Constructive Criticism and checking out Limited Time Only and Common Knowledge 2 podcasts, but can better focusing on limited and popper play. So. But the point of this podcast is always improving. We believe if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And we're going to be doing what we can all the time to be getting better ourselves. So, with that being said, Matt Kling, what did you do to improve at Magic the Gathering this week?
Well, I played my first Pro Tour. So, I feel like that was a pretty big always improving moment for myself. I've certainly tested for a lot of Pro Tours in the past, but never gotten to play in any of them myself. So,
did you feel like... You know, other Pro Tours, you know, we've had decks like Marvel, you know, for our teammates to pilot and things like that. You know, this one, not so much.
Well, I mean, to be fair, there was a pretty clear best deck going into it, and we mostly knew what it was, but we hoped it wasn't, was the idea. we played something that specifically we knew had a bad matchup against Black Red because we were hoping somebody else figured out something.
Oh, I like it. Yeah, Michael had told me after the show like how that didn't have a good black red matchup, and then I saw that that's what you guys were playing, and I'm like, maybe they broke it, maybe they figured out how to beat that matchup or something. So I was.
I don't think it's unwinnable, but it's not good. It's probably
What did you guys play?
30%. We played blue black Gate to the Afterlife.
Okay, and what led you to that decision?
Mostly after. An insane amount of testing. That was the only deck that we actually enjoyed playing. Which feels like a little bit of a cop out for sure. Like especially for my first Pro Tour, I probably should have just played the deck that I thought was the best. But I was concerned that it wouldn't actually be because the problem with playing the deck that's perceived as the best before the Pro Tour is you're either going to play mirrors all day or you're going to play people that think that they can beat you most of the time.
Well, at my first Pro Tour, I did end up playing the deck that was perceived the best deck going into the Pro Tour, and then blue red
the Instal artifact deck.
Yeah, yeah. Happened. So
sure,
you know, get me. So I, you know,
it's a little bit more justifiable when the Pro Tour is only 2 weeks after the set release, though, right? Like, we've had a lot of time for somebody to actually break it and figure out what was good against black red vehicles, and nobody's really done it.
Yeah.
So,
well, with that being said, what was your biggest takeaway from the Pro Tour for you?
Biggest takeaway: drafting at the Pro Tour is really hard. I mean, I knew it would be, but it was more difficult than I anticipated. I specifically ended up in an archetype that I didn't want to, even though, you know, I knew going into it that this was not where I wanted to be, and then ended up in it anyway. So
that happened to me in my second draft at the Pro Tour. I like very much didn't want to be in that archetype.
Yeah.
This is.
Yeah.
Where I am.
I think the problem was that I was taking good white cards too highly. I think you're actually supposed to just like stay pretty far away from white if you can at all do that. Like I third picked a Sarah Angel, and looking back on it, I think that might actually just be wrong because like white is so shallow unless you decide the grizzly bears are playable, which I don't think they are.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Drafting at the Pro Tour is hard. You hit her first.
Yep.
Breaking news. Mason, what about you? What did you do to improve at Magic this week?
Focused and thought and talked a lot about RPTQ, Team Unified Standard.
Sorry, I literally lobbed you. Lobbed you it.
You lobbed me it?
I lobbed you. I crushed Spencer.
Oh, lobbed I didn't want to actually spoil it for people. I thought they... Yeah, of course I crushed Spencer. What did you think? Masterfully outplayed every turn. I never top decked anything I need.
Yeah,
it was good. Yeah. But I did do a lot of... I play tested some of Spencer on the Constructed Clash video, which will be up tomorrow, or probably today at the time you're hearing this. And then I played a lot of leagues with my deck and talked to my teammates a lot and tried to figure out exactly where we wanted to be. So just doing a lot of conversating about that. So, yeah.
So I haven't been on the podcast in 2 weeks. So in that time, I won a 1K/PPDQ with Blue White Control and then have focused almost entirely on the RPTQ. Just to kind of get ideas going. I'm probably going to have to switch to Modern now as GP Vegas is coming up. And I won't be playtesting at all before the week of because I'll be in Las Vegas for the entire week. So. But I learned something pretty valuable last week, which is if you think something is good and that you can play it well at the PPDQ, I kind of wanted to put my money where my mouth was, where it was like, I think Blue White's really well positioned this week. I think that if you think that something's good and it can play like a top three deck and can play it well, you can win a PDQ with it, or a PPDQ with it. And I've been telling people that while winning a lot of PPDQs with Bruise, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like Snake, when Snake wasn't good, Jeskai Control, you know, Crater's Claw decks, like. I don't know. But I did want to just like. I don't know. So what I'm saying makes sense.
Yeah, well, sort of. You kind of just learn to trust yourself and like your metagame read.
No, that's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying.
I would certainly say that you are handicapping yourself by playing something that's not one of the best decks.
Right. What I'm saying is. That too often people try and metagame when you can just play one of the best decks, play it well, and end up winning a lot of PPTQs.
Definitely. I actually think there's almost no reason to metagame a PPTQ.
Yeah. That's what I was actually saying, Mason.
Right.
Hmm. Okay. Well, yeah. I just misunderstood where you're going with that.
Yeah. But I had a lot of fun playing Magic the last 2 weeks, and I'm really excited to start playing Modern. So, yeah. Let's go on to our Patreon shout-out. So this week, we want to give a shout-out to Tyler J., our newest patron. Thank you so much, Tyler. And we have a question from one of our patrons that says, been having a bunch of issues performing at tournaments lately, so I'll probably start with Standard. Been on Blue-White Control lately, and I feel like my 60... I feel good about my 60, but my sideboard can use some work. I found myself in winning ins the past 2 PUDQs, but just can't close out events. Losing to 1 to Blue-Back Midrange yesterday, then blue God Pharaoh's gift a week ago. I'm sorry, it's like really hot in my basement for some reason, so I'm like,
yeah, it's really hot in my basement as well. It's probably just because it's like 100 degrees today.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I played poorly in either of these, or just drew well in, or they just drew well in both. But there's so there's not really much to go off there. The main thing is that I'm kind of disappointed I'm not getting there. Then the deck of Mono that I've had two poor events. I went 2-3 drop in my second time playing Dredge. Started out 2-0 with unfortunate draws in game 3 versus Burn, and a pretty bad punt. Last weekend went 2-3 with Blue Moon. I feel like I know control reasonably well, but can never do well with it. And a combination of not being good with it as I should be to play it in a meta where you need to be great to do well. I guess the main thing I'm trying to ask is, how do I recover from few unfortunate poor events, and what should I be doing differently? So, I'd like to start with the PPTQs, because I think that the truth is that you can only win the matches in front of you, and if you're doing it enough to put yourself in winning ends a reasonable number of times, you will close eventually, and that's just how I see it. Like, I remember, I think it was Michael's second episode on Constructive Criticism, he's like, if I get myself in a position to have a winning in, to put myself in the elimination rounds, it was probably a good enough tournament for me. And like, you can't think of not making top 8 as a failure, because that means that top 8 is a success, when the only real success to PPQ is winning.
Well, that's certainly true. That's definitely what we're all there for, right? But it's hard to judge everything off just whether you won or lost, right? Because it is right. A numbers game. Like, you can't base so much off one match of Magic, right? Like, I think making it to the top 8 consistently is an accomplishment, because that means that you're consistently playing well. Yeah. A lot of the top 8 matches are actually just, I wouldn't say variants, but certainly they're going to be good players in the top 8 of your PPTQ wherever you are. And I mean, losing some amount of the top 8 matches is not a big thing.
What, Matt, why don't you talk about your losing streak that one season of PPTQ top 8s?
Oh, I took 3 second places in a row, in addition to just top 8ing every single PPTQ the entire season and didn't manage to qualify.
Who were the 3 people you lost to?
In the finals, I lost to Austin Geltz, rather.
Yeah.
Then Justin Sloan, and then Quentin Pierce.
I remember beating you that day.
Wait. No, you lost to me in the.
I knew not, it was not Spencer. That, I knew that's why.
Not in that succession. Yeah. Not in that succession of those 3, though. I don't think it was the same season. I've certainly lost to you in the finals of PPTQs before.
I thought it was the same season, but the point that I was trying to make is, like, you're talking about players that, like, Justin Sloan probably has more PPTQ top 8s than, like, everybody else out here.
They were all good Magic players. I don't think that.
Yeah, and so like you said, putting all of your stock into, like. Putting all your stock into any given match of Magic, so you're, like, this person's narrowing down their focus into that winning in, right? And it's like, okay, but if you have winning ins against, you know, Michael Hinderrockers and you know, Matt Klings and, you know, these local grinders that top 8 all the time, like, what is your actual win percentage against these players realistically anyway?
Right. And I wouldn't even say that it's not even just about that. Like, I mean, even if you're losing win-ins, people that are worse than you or that you think are worse than you, it's something that happens sometimes in Magic, right? Like, I think as long as you're being consistent and winning more than you're losing, that's mostly all we can hope for, right? I mean, the best players in the world have, like, what, 65, 67% win percentages?
Yeah, definitely. And it's also just kind of like, obviously your goal when you go there is to win, and we talked about that a lot. Like, the first place is the only thing that really matters. But also, at the end of the day, like, what almost matters even more in the big scheme of things is, like, are you playing well and focusing on playing good Magic in front of you? And so, if you're playing well and your opponent, you know, they just drew another Glorybringer than you, or you didn't ever draw your 5th land, then as long as you did the right stuff to try and stay in the game, that's all you can do. So,
yep.
Yeah. I agree. I hope that's helpful. I know that it's not, like, exactly what you were looking for, but I think that putting yourself in a position to have winning ends in the long run is going to treat you really well. But I would also say, don't just focus on those matches. Like, look at the matches that you won. Look at the matches, like, always look at what you can be doing to improve, not just in those short moments, right?
Well, to answer your question more directly, as far as what you should be doing differently, honestly, based on the information we have here, there's nothing saying that you should be doing anything differently.
Yeah.
I mean, just because you didn't top 8 the PPTQ doesn't mean you did something wrong.
Yeah.
So.
Happens to everyone.
Yeah. I will say, we'd love to see your deck list. You know, you're saying you're unhappy with your sideboard. Shoot it over to me. I love blue-white control right now, so I'd be happy to look at it and give some feedback. So, speaking of decks that we give feedback to, if you're a patron of $5 or more, you get to be in our Constructed Critics group, and in that group we post Deck Doctor threads, which will let us talk about a deck that people post. We talk about what we love, what we would change, and where we think the deck stands today. And this is one that our listener Jeremiah won a Modern IQ with back in April, that he wants us to take a look at. And this is a deck that, Matt, that I've played a lot of. I don't know, have you played a lot of Affinity?
Yeah, I've played quite a bit recently. I've probably played 100 matches with Affinity, which maybe sounds like a lot, but it's not a lot compared to the amount of matches I played with basically every other deck.
Yeah, so this deck list is 3 Memnite, 4 Ornithopter, 4 Signal Pass, 4 Arcbound Ravager, 3 Steel Overseer, 2 Vault Scourge, 4 Vault Scourge, 2 Edge Champion, 3 Master of Aetherium, 2 Galvanic Blast, 3 Thought Cast, 4 Mox Opal, 3 Springleaf Drum, 4 Cranial Plating, 17 lands, playing 2 basics being 1 Island and 1 Mountain. He does have a 1-2 split on Glimmer Void and Spire of Industry, and then a sideboard of 1 Biforce, 1 Gravedigger's Cage, 1 Stubborn Denial. This is like every single Affinity sideboard. It's just all one of 1 Thought Seize, 1 Ancient Grudge, 1 Spellskite, 1 Whip Flare, 3 Blood Moon, 1 Dismember, 1 Edge Champion, 2 Gearport Aether Grid, and 1 Wear Tear.
I would like to point out that even though it looks like a bunch of one-offs, it's not actually, right? Because there are multiple cards that serve the same purpose.
Yes.
Yeah. That are just better at doing one thing than another.
I meant for reading purposes.
Right, yeah.
So, let's start with the main deck. So this is actually, I think, three or four cards different from the deck that I typically play. And I love my deck list. But I love this most of what's going on here too. I think that one of the things about Affinity is that's really important is understanding why you have cards in the numbers that you have them. Because your flex slots are really, really important in metagaming because you have so many spots that basically have to stay the same. So if you want to play 3 Thought Cast, I think the main thing is you just have to know why you want to play Thought Cast.
So yeah, I'm curious, what do you feel like is the metagame where you want Thought Cast?
So I have one in my deck list, specifically because Jund was on an uptick, and I think that that's important.
So you feel like Thought Cast is better in those matchups than just, say, the 3rd and 4th Edge Champion?
Well, I don't like 4 Edge Champion in the main.
Right, but I'm saying if those are the matchups you're trying to metagame against, wouldn't it just be better to go up to 4 Edge Champions?
So one of the problems that I have playing more Edge Champions in the main is that it's only good in matchups where Edge Champion is good in, and Thoughtcast is basically never bad. It's just really good.
Sure, it's a little bit more of a hedge, maybe.
Yeah.
What about Karn over Thoughtcast? Because that's what I was thinking. Because that's like the new card I've been seeing people experiment with, where like they cut Memnites or Baubles and play Karn.
I don't know.
I've actually seen that. The Memnites over Baubles, or the Baubles over Memnites, actually seems kind of great. I'm kind of into that. As far as the Karns, I'm not 100% sure. It's maybe good. I've been playing some amount of Affinity decks with the main deck Hazoret, and that's been pretty great. And yeah. I imagine that Karn attacks the format on a similar axis, like at least that, you know, it's not something that you're going to lose to Affinity hate with, mostly.
Yeah. One thing I do want to say about Karn, though, that, you know, my initial reaction is that I didn't like it, but that actually is, I'm thinking about it. I do like that. One of the reasons that I like Karn in decks like Green Black Snake and Mono Black is because all your cards do virtually the same thing. And a lot of times in Affinity, that can be true in certain matchups.
Well, especially with the insanely low land count. And, like, honestly, if you ever hit the Ravager or the Plating, which are the big payoff cards, you can always just minus, and it's really fine.
Yeah.
And it plays like a card advantage. It plays like a Thought Cast and, like, a Master of Aetherium when you need it, too.
Yeah,
obviously not booking your team, but...
I might be into that. You could convince me that that's... You might have just made me want to try this deck instead of what I was going to play for Vegas, dude.
Yeah, I know that JL was talking about that from CC Worldwide, and I played against it a couple times in leagues now. It's interesting. Yeah. I've been playing decks that it's bad against, but I mean, that's just how it plays out.
I would be pretty scared to play that without 4 Springleaf Drum, and I think that also I would want to go up to 4 Galvanic Blast for this GP, like if you're trying to take this to Vegas. I think it's, you know, disrupting humans just enough is really important. And having the maximum number of those if you're going to play something like Karn would also be really important.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Yeah.
I agree with all that. The actual biggest problem I have with this deck list is the one of Glimmer Void over the two Spire of Industries. Honestly, versus the two Spire of Industries, I think that any matchup where your life total is important, you're not really going to lose to Spire of Industry. Like, the burn matchup is already pretty great. I can't even think of the last time I lost a burn with Affinity. And there are a lot of other decks that punish you for having a sometimes pain land. It's pretty rare that you're even using Spire for the colored mana anyway.
Yeah, one thing that I after testing Spire of Industry, I just switched all of my.
Yeah, I just think I think Glimmer Void is just mostly an obsolete inaffinity, for lack of a better word. It's too often that you have to actually mulligan hands because you're like, yeah, this hand's pretty great, but it doesn't start until turn two. So like, if I go turn one Glimmer Void, Memnite go or whatever, and then they just have a removal spell, I just lose the game.
Yeah,
and you have so few colored spells anyways. Like even in post board games, like it's gonna cost you like. Two life, probably, maybe three.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I agree with that. Glimmer Void has always felt like that feels like the games I get to like the free ones in Affinity, where they do like what you talked about.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any other changes or any loves that you guys have for this deck?
I mean, yeah, I don't love the three Springleaf Drums, and I'm not sure that you need the second basic land either.
I think that could be a concession to things in his meta, right. It was for an IQ.
Sure. I mean, if you're getting like Field of Ruined a lot, I guess. I don't think you really need it for Path to Exile. Like having the one basic is fine because it's mostly just for value rather than like trying to get a color.
Yeah. One thing that I will say that I really love about this deck specifically, looking over the sideboard, I actually like a lot of it. Kind of like Matt said, you have a lot of cards that do really similar things. Although I've been playing more Wear Tears recently, but that could be wrong again because of things like Lantern.
Yeah. I think it's just hard to like. Because you definitely want at least one Ancient Grudge. I think you want to have access to that. The Biforce is maybe not necessary, so like maybe you could cut that for another Wear Tear. But if there's like a lot of affinity that you're expecting, I think that having the Biforce is better most of the time.
Yeah,
I agree.
You really have to... it's really about how many Stony Silences you expect to play against, right?
Right.
So I'm not 100% sure. This is way more Blood Moons than I usually like to play, but it's not unreasonable. Like if that's something you're trying to do.
Yeah. Maybe that's where I would make the cut, but I certainly would be interested in another Wear Tear in the sideboard, but I like the sideboard outside of that.
Yeah, again, it's really hard to justify playing, four or five artifact removal spells in the sideboard, right? Like, if you have two Wear Tears and an Ancient Grudge and a Biforce, yeah. It's kind of a lot.
It is a lot. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, it seems like the only place you could cut is Blood Moon, so.
I like, this is my one of my top favorite decks in Modern, though, so, I think that just the fact that we're all going to have different opinions on the flex slots because that's why they're flex slots.
Yeah, I agree. One other thing I would like to say about the sideboard is I really think it is better to just play Rest in Peace in the sideboard over something like Gravedigger's Cage. You don't really have a good reason to make it a colorless artifact. I mean, the fact that it costs one mana is pretty good, but Rest in Peace just does so much more of what you want it to do in the matchups where you need that kind of thing. Like, if you play Gravedigger's Cage against Hollow One, for instance, they're not really going to care that much. They're going to have Ancient Grudges anyway if they ever need it. And, like, Grafdigger's Cage just doesn't turn off Gurmog Angler or Tassigar or anything like that. Whereas actual Rest in Peace is just going to, it's going to make it really hard for the Hollow One player to catch up.
Yeah, I like Grafdigger's Cage a lot more if I'm playing the Karns, where it's like, okay, this, actively works towards my game plan. Of
if I'm playing, Ancient Strings or whatever, I'm definitely going to play Grafdigger's Cage, right?
But yeah, I agree.
Don't think that there's a good reason to do that in Affinity. Like, it pumps plating a little bit, and it's something you can theoretically stack off the Ravager, but I don't think that those are big enough reasons.
All right. I like it. Good old Affinity.
All right. Let's talk about the card of the week. So, we are going to add this card of the week to last month's bundle. And we're going to, just because, it was the Pro Tour and, this is exciting, because we're going to talk about Goblin Chain Whirler. Big surprise. Oh.
I was hoping you would say, Magma Spray. I'm like, we killed all the Scrounders at the PT. Just, no-sell the Goblin Chain Whirler. All right. That card's a lot better, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. So, Matt Kling, I'll let you go. What makes this card of the week?
Well, Goblin Chain Whirler is just exactly what you need in so many different matchups. Honestly, it's become a lot worse now because it exists, which is kind of awkward. It's so good that people just stop playing the things that are bad against it, because you just can't justify playing things like, Gluntsleeve Siphoner and Champion of Wits and anything else like that. Land of War Elves to a certain extent. Like, certainly if you're on the draw, Land of War Elves looks ridiculous against Goblin Chain Whirler. Honestly, that's not even the card. That's not even the part of the card that I think is kind of over the top. I think the fact that it's also a 3/3 first strike, in addition to just being great against all these things.
I also feel like it's the first strike.
Yeah.
Like, I've been playing Mono Red in my MTG Arena dailies. Mm-hmm. And, like, the fact that that card has first strike, just, like, it's basically reads unblockable. Like, it doesn't actually
it's
read.
It's really over the top. Especially in a deck that's playing so many removal spells, right? Because you're like, I'm going to try to run this sketchy double block and then just lose the game if he has, you know, one of the
Shock!
9 spells or whatever that kill my guy.
It's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, like, I had a game against Merfolk where I, like, attacked, and the guy, like, tanked for 2 minutes, and he, like, does the triple block, and I'm like, okay, good talk, bro.
Yep.
Like,
More than even just the fact that it's unblockable, it, like, plays defense so well, too, which is something these red decks usually struggle with.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, like, your aggressive matchups just aren't that bad if you're going to draw a bunch of Chain Whirlers. Like, even, like, I mean, I've played a lot of black-white aggro leading up to this Pro Tour, and, like, if they play Chain Whirler, like, your History of Anallias and your Scrap Heap Scroungers and your Toolcraft Exemplars, they all look ridiculous.
Yep. Agreed. It's an insane card. I don't know what else to say.
Mason, mm-hmm. We kind of covered how this card fits into the format, but what decks play this card right now?
Well, if your deck has red, it's probably a good chance that it's Chain Whirler. The main decks that play it are Mono Red and Red Black, aggro or midrange. All the decks basically play it, they're red black. I'm trying to think of a red deck that really doesn't play it, and even the Godfrey does play it.
We tried to play it in Grixis Energy, but that really didn't pan out.
That's how good that card is. They're like, we're playing this 3-color deck, or we get to play all these powerful 3-color cards, and they're like, we really want this red, red, red card. So
to be fair, it wasn't a 3-drop in that deck.
That's fair. That's good. Yeah, you think about like a 5-drop or a 4-drop. But still says a lot. That card is insane. It really has warped the metagame in a way, and I'm sure we'll talk about that more later too, but the card's insane. I'm thinking about a red deck. All the red decks play it.
Just literally said it twice.
Oh, what deck? I'm sorry? I didn't hear you were talking.
Dinosaurs doesn't play it.
Sure, but that's more of a green deck, just like playing. I guess it does play Rekindling Phoenix, right? Sometimes.
Yeah,
it plays Phoenix and Glorybringer.
It doesn't usually play Glorybringer. It does play Phoenix. I think that, you know, the God Pharaoh's deck plays it. The other God Pharaoh's, the Goblin's God Pharaoh's deck plays it. It's all over the place. So it's certainly something that you're gonna, you know, need to be prepared for. But let's talk about the power rankings, because that's actually the point of the show this week. You know, so for the Pro Tours, we don't do it by what won or what top baited. Hint, you know, we'll talk about what won next week with a special guest. Hint. This week, we're going to give them points based upon the number of match wins that they got. So 18 to 20 points, we gave 1.2. 21 to 23 points, we gave 2.2. And 24 to 27 points, we gave 3 points to. So, with that being said, we're not going to pull these ones up, but I just kind of want to mention the kind of the decks that had at least 3 people do well with them, which was blue-green Karn got 5 points. Blue mid-range decks between Esper and blue-black got 7 points. And green-black snake got 11 points, but none of them make the top 5. Are any of these decks that you guys would be considering playing tomorrow?
No, they would not.
I would play the blue-green Karn deck just to get a feel for it, because I expect some people to play it at the RPTQ. But I would just want to play with that deck and kind of get a feel for its play patterns. But I'm not excited to play the deck.
Yeah, green-black snake did have one of the better day 2 percentages. But it having such a good day 2 percentage and having such low points kind of makes me scared of it.
Yeah. It feels like it has a really bad red and black-red matchup. which is not exciting.
I mean, so in my testing, Green Black Snake was basically like the 45% deck. Like, you didn't have any bad matchups, and certainly you could win any matchup if you were just running pretty well. Mm-hmm. But there was no matchup I was excited about playing.
Well,
other than white black, right?
Yes, other than white black, although I don't think that that's a particularly good metagame call either. So.
Yeah, I mean, like, you shouldn't be playing white black, but I'm just saying. Yeah. Speaking of white black, it does come in as the number 5 deck. Guys, I don't actually know how anybody did well with this or had the stuff to play it.
I mean, I don't know if you noticed, but I think his name is Morgan McClellan. He was the one that won the team GP with this deck, and also, I believe, went 7-3 and constructed with the deck this week at the Pro Tour, and certainly top 16 or top 24 or something like that.
Yeah.
So that's pretty impressive for him. I mean, he certainly has figured something out that the rest of us haven't.
Yeah, because when I play this deck, and when I see it played, I'm like, this deck is bad.
Right.
Not bad like it has bad cards. It doesn't have bad cards. It's a mono good card. It's like a very sweet deck. The problem is I don't think it lines up well.
Well, what I would say is that in my experience, mostly all of your game ones are pretty good, especially if your opponent doesn't know what you're playing. There are so many times in Standard right now that you'll just keep a hand that can't beat a Toolcraft Exemplar.
Yeah.
But post-boarded in every single matchup, it just gets worse across the board except for against blue-white.
Well, let's break this deck down. Matt, can you give us a simple summary of what this deck is doing?
Basically, you're trying to curve some pretty aggressive draws into some late-game haymakers like Lyra and Karn to try to close the game out.
What are the major key cards in that strategy?
Toolcraft Exemplar and Heart of Kirin are the major cards for that strategy.
Yeah, History of Benalia don't make your list on this one?
No, I mean, History of Benalia is a great card, and it might even be the best card in the deck, but it's not why the deck works.
Yeah, I think that History does this trick where when you draw the second one, you win most of those games. Mm-hmm. And so people think it's a History deck, but History is just like the sub game that the deck can sometimes go off with. What are the key matchups that you want to worry about or think about while you're playing this deck?
Well, I would say that you have to have a pretty good sideboard plan for black-red, basically playing anything right now. But particularly this deck, because that matchup is not great. I mean, even in game ones, that's one of your worst game one matchups. You can certainly win with a nice Ixalan's Binding on like Rekindling Phoenix or, you know, even Goblin Chainwhirl or something out of the time, but that's mostly the only way that I've found to win against the deck.
Yeah, and we kind of mentioned it.
Yeah, as far as matchups you're trying to hit, I think blue-white is a pretty great matchup for the deck, especially if you build the sideboard with it in mind.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that as far as like other bad matchups, I think that your worst matchup by a lot is Green Black Snake. I don't know how a deck like Green Black Snake can have like such a good matchup because of the way the compositions are, but I think the matchup that I really want to hit is typically going to be blue-white control or Esper control decks that aren't specifically slanted towards black.
So I would say that black-white is a pretty great matchup, but that is another matchup where they actually do get a little bit better post-board because Fumigate is so good against you and you can't exactly sideboard against it. It's very hard to kind of draw or kind of find the right line and the balance between boarding against their game one deck and boarding against what they could be having post board. Yeah. Because if you board against their game one deck and then they just have a bunch of Fumigates, like now your deck looks ridiculous. And if you don't board that way, then they can just board back down to Toolcrafts and now your deck looks silly again.
Yeah. Another thing that I think this deck has going for it that's true of a lot of decks like this. This deck is a very good Angel of Sanctions deck post-board. You get to overload their removal spells, and most of the games that I've lost to this deck typically involve Angel of Sanctions crushing me in some way.
Sure. I mean, not for nothing, too. Like, I've definitely had the interaction between Angel of Sanctions and Lyra come up on both sides of it a bunch of times as well. Like, you think that you're getting really close to winning this game, and then, like, they play an Angel of Sanctions, you're like, well, it's kind of bad for me, and then, you know, you deal them a few more points of damage, and then they play a Lyra, and now all of a sudden Angel of Sanctions is a, you know, 4-5 lifelink.
Yeah.
Like, oh man.
Yeah. It's interesting. Do you think the reason people play this at the Pro Tour is some of them thought maybe blue white can adjust to beat red black and they just decide to go with this? Kind of like in the same idea where like Matt and Michael played Blue-Black Gift, hoping that Red-Black just wasn't the truth?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's certainly some of that. I think there's also some amount of these players just knowing these decks very well and deciding that they were going to give... this deck would give them a better chance, personally, to win this tournament than, saying, playing, you know, six or seven Red-Black mirrors.
That's fair.
Let's move on to our next deck. We have Steelleaf Stompy, coming in with 17 points. Mason, what would you say is a simple summary of this deck?
Your goal is to play big creatures quickly and then attack them. And then, depending on your build post-board, you have a little bit of disruption, but you're going to do the same thing. And generally, no one can ever outsize you because your best draws are Elf into 5/4 into, like, Galta-type stuff. Well, I guess not, actually. You'd actually play, like, a Jade Light Ranger. But you can also go, like, Heart of Kieran into Vronus into Galta. So you're playing turn 4 and turn 5 Galtas pretty consistently, and you're just bigger than everyone else. You can attack through it, and it puts a lot of pressure on, like, the red-black decks to have the right answers to beat you, and it puts a lot of pressure on the blue-white decks to draw the Fumigate and the Settle on time.
I would say that this is a deck we definitely underestimated going into the PT. We just really didn't appreciate how much you need to interact with this deck in order to be able to conceivably win. Mm-hmm. Like, honestly, this matchup was, like, almost 100-0 against us playing the blue-black gate deck because we just didn't have any interaction in the main deck. So if they played Atlanta Worlds, mostly just lost the game.
That makes a lot of sense. So have you seen the blue deck? I assume you have, like, the blue version compared to the black version.
The blue version is on screen, by the way.
Yeah, the blue version being the Merchant Dock and... Oh, you're talking about the one that's splashing blue?
Yeah, just splashing blue. So they're just playing commit and negate. Because I was talking to Michael, and before the PT, he was talking about how he really liked the black version because you get to play Heart of Kieran and Scrap Heap Scrounger, and that gives you, like, extra... Like, the Scrounger is the main thing, right? Because now you got another thing to crew your heart. I was wondering if maybe post-PT you adapt, because I know a lot of people who really love these Stompy decks, and they like to debate and talk about which version's the best version.
Right. I've heard some debate about this, and I don't think that... I mean, commit is really nice against things like Rekindling Phoenix and Glorybringer, but it's certainly not the spell I'm looking for against any kind of control deck, or even the mirror, really. I mean, it's nice if you can get a Galta with it, but it's going to be often too slow and clunky.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think Heart of Kieran is just going to be pretty great all the time, so I would probably at least start with that version unless I had some better reason to switch to blue.
Alright, that makes a lot of sense. Spencer, where are you on the old blue versus black here?
I put the blue one on screen because it's the one that I kind of wanted us to talk about a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I'm a little surprised to hear Matt's take on this because I've actually tried this deck quite a bit, as I think that it's like the only deck that Atlanta Worlds is currently good in Standard. And I haven't really found very many good matchups with this deck.
So I'm not even saying that this deck is good or that you have a lot of good matchups. That's certainly not what I was implying. What I'm saying is that your opponent's deck actually needs to interact with you. It's definitely 100% on them to react to you rather than you having to do anything. If they're trying to play a game where they're just trying to do their own thing and build up their stuff, they're just going to lose 100% of the time.
Okay. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know, this deck, it surprises me every time like I play against it. Well, not every time, but because there are the games where, like, I just play and I kill their stuff and they get stuck with, like, a Galta in hand, or they don't Gravel, they draw too many lands, like, the stuff you expect from a beatdown deck. But the games where it has, like, a pretty, like, above average to average draw, it does play out very well, especially if you don't interact on the curve. Like, you can't race this deck. You basically have to answer one of the big spells, like a Steelleaf Champion or a Territorial Allosaur if they're playing that card or whatever.
Right. I don't think it's very hard to break up the synergies because, like you said, they do run a bunch of Galtas, and like it's pretty easy to break up that with just removal spells that you're already looking to play most of the time. And it does often come down to the fact that they just get stuck with a bunch of Galtas in their hand because they're uncastable when they don't have any creatures in play.
Yeah, definitely.
But you definitely still have to have, you know, a removal spell, and it probably has to be better than Fatal Push most of the time unless you have it on turn one to kill the Land Worlds.
Yeah, I agree. It feels like you have to have like an unlicensed type card. Like, that's what's felt from my side.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, even playing Mono Black, where, you know, you play lots of removal, it's surprisingly hard. Especially because, like, if they have the Blossoming Defense, you're taking that turn off of curving, and they might have...
Those are actually the games that I usually win, are the games where I have Blossoming Defense.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it feels like your win rate correlates a lot
to that. Especially if they're trying to cast for Eska's Contempt, it's usually a game over.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that surprising, right? Like, if you get to dispel a Vraska's Contempt, it's usually pretty good.
Yeah. So, I do want to talk about, I think that, you know, while we can have that debate, I do kind of want to talk about a simple summary and the key cards, just like we did with the other deck. So I think the simple summary of this is, like, you very much are an aggressive beatdown deck in the form of, like, big beaters, right? So you want to play your Llanowar Elves into your three drops, like Rotas and Steel Leaf Champion, Thrashing Brontodon. And then, you know, you want to finish the game by kind of closing the door with things like Territory Allosaurus or Galta or Vertus Gearhulk. So it's a overwhelm them in a different kind of way than other aggressive decks, which we kind of haven't seen for a while outside of like maybe monster strategies. But I think that the stompy decks do it in a different way than the monsters decks do.
Yeah, they're not necessarily playing difficult to deal with threats. They're just playing a lot of them and they all can solo you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So with that being said, I think that Matt Kling's point might be like the one to talk about. It's that there's not really key matchups with this deck as much as there is like your decisions and how you sequence versus the type of decks you're playing against are probably what's going to matter more than the overall matchup. So be cognizant of that. Yeah. Let's go on to the next deck we have, which is Mono Red Aggro. This deck came in with 37 points. Not to be confused with other decks that have red cards in them. This is, in fact, separate. With that being said, Matt Kling, why don't you give us a simple summary of a Mono Red Aggro?
Mono Red Aggro deck is basically like a Sly deck from the days of old. You play a bunch of really cheap creatures and you're just trying to count down the points of life from your opponent. Usually you're trying to get on the board fast. You're mostly going to get on the board faster than any other deck, so the goal is to get them at a low enough life total that it makes their good blocks awkward.
Yeah, is there you know, any advantage to playing Mono Red, in your opinion?
Certainly Hazard is the advantage.
Well, you can play Hazard in both decks, right?
It's the mana, maybe.
Not exactly. I mean, you certainly can play Hazard in red-black, but it's not the same. Your Hazards are much better in mono-red because your curve isn't ridiculous.
Yeah, you get to play four in mono-red. That's like, is that what you meant, Matt? Is that you get to, like,
yes, max? Yeah, absolutely. You get to play four, and honestly, like, the Hazards in red-black are often not even real creatures. Like, I mean, they're creatures that hopefully Lightning Rod of Vraska's Contempt, but honestly, you can't even attack with them about 20% of the time, I would say.
Yeah. You know, I think that one of the key cards that I look at when I'm playing Mono Red right now, Fight with Fire in the sideboard is the first one that I want to highlight. I think this is pretty big technology for this deck. They were playing like Puncturing Blow last season, and Fight with Fire being 3-mana is like big game.
To be fair, I think that if it weren't for Lyra getting printed, you would probably still see those same people playing Puncturing Blow if that was the kind of effect they wanted, because it kills the Scarab God.
Well,
that was the reason to play Puncturing Blow before, right? Like, Fight with Fire will never do that.
Well, you would bring it in against dinosaurs and monsters back then, too, which this card will fill the same role in those slots.
Sure. I forget what the exact wording of Puncturing Blow. Does it kill Rekindling Phoenix forever?
It exiles, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why you brought it in there, yeah.
Right. So that would certainly... It would certainly not be as good against Rekindling Phoenix as well, although costing 3 mana, like you said, is very important. And obviously the biggest thing is that it has a kicker spell, or a kicker cost, rather, that makes it quite good against blue-white on both modes. If they bring in Lyras, you get to fight with fire their Lyra. If they start Settle the Wreckaging you, can actually fight
you
with fire.
You think you're going to get to 9 mana against blue-white?
I've had that happen both for me and against me several times.
Wow.
Honestly, yeah. It doesn't resolve that often. But getting the 9 mana is actually not that big of a problem.
Okay.
Yeah, like if you.
I mean, I guess you're playing 24 lands, so it definitely can happen.
Yeah, I mean, well, Settle the Wreckage is actually the key, right? Like, they settle for 3.
Oh, there we go. That makes sense. All right.
Rampant.
I accept. I accept your statement.
But I would actually say that Mono Red Aggro was probably the deck of the tournament this weekend. I saw multiple people doing very well with that deck, and obviously the overall winner at the PT. And I think that based on the points, it was a much higher win percentage than red-black, probably. Because it wasn't nearly as much of the metagame as red-black was.
Yeah, that's probably true. Because of that. Do you think it has a pretty good red-black matchup? What do you think about that?
So, in my experience, here's the thing. it doesn't have a good red-black matchup, except for the card Hazoret is unbeatable. So if you're not drawing Hazorets, it's actually not a good matchup. But if you are drawing Hazorets, it's basically, you can just never lose. So
I have played a lot of decks that were really good against mono-red, unless they drew Hazoret.
Yeah, I mean, it's been the thing about mono-red for a while now, right? Where you're like, oh yeah, I'm playing Snake, so my red matchup's great, except for when they draw Hazoret, and then I'm just going to
Like, so I think that the key cards that I want to talk about have mostly been covered, right? You know, Hazard's a huge one. I do think that these decks going to 24 lands and like kind of maxing out on those four drops is a concession to decks like Black Red, though. I think that's why you're seeing that,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the next deck we have here. Coming with 38 points, we have Blue Control. 18 of them coming from Blue White. 13 of them coming from Esper, 6 of them coming from Blue-Black, and 1 of them coming from Jeskai Control. So, with that being said, where are you guys at on... Well, let's do this. Let's do a simple summary. I'll do this one. So, Blue-White Control, depending on how you build it, is going to try and maximize certain effects. Typically, those effects are going to be some number of hard counter spells, like Disallow, Negate and Essence Scatter, kind of mixing those up to find to get you to the point where you can play a Teferi and untap with it and take the game over slowly. Slowly being the operative word. Once you've done that, you can protect it with things like Seal Away, those same counter spells, right? Essence Scatter, Negate. You try and close the game by casting a Commit to Memory or a Pull from Tomorrow. And that's basically how Blue-White wins. I think that the key cards in this deck are obviously Teferi. And then I would say some kind of split between Settle the Wreckage and Fumigate is super important in this deck, Matt.
Yeah, certainly out of the Blue-White deck, I 100% agree.
Yeah. A lot of the Esper decks, there were both Blue-Black leaning ones and Blue-White leaning ones. And then Blue-Black is obviously Blue-Black Control from basically Last Standard.
The Blue-White ones would interest me. I haven't seen those lists. Most of the Esper controls that I've seen are just Blue-Black splashing for Teferi, rather.
I think I saw one that I almost used as the deck. So I'll see if I can send you that later.
Okay.
We did include approach Blue-White and non-approach decks. If you had to pick from all of the control decks, Mason, which blue control deck would you want to start with?
I'd probably start with Autumn's Esper list that she wrote about for Star City Games today. It looks pretty powerful. I like Blue-Black against what's doing pretty well right now, and I like the card Teferi, so I kind of get to live the best of both worlds. Although I'm not sure how well it will actually play out. It obviously played out well for Autumn at the PT, but it feels like Blue-White, everyone's trying to beat it. Everyone's really aware of it, especially like from the perspective of like the RPTQ, right? Where it's like everyone... There's like a level zero thought that like Teferi decks have to be played. And for the most part, they probably do. So I would try maybe Sun out after that, just because it can actually win sort of quickly. But the Sun has that classic problem of like, even if you win game one, game two and three is so drastically in the other side's favor. So I'd probably start with Esper and then move to Sun if I didn't like Esper. What about you, Spencer?
I am going to be the Teferi seat at our RPTQ.
Mm-hmm.
And I will. I can almost guarantee you that Approach of the Second Sun will be in my deck.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I was actually thinking while we were at the Pro Tour that Approach of the Second Sun was a very good metagame call, but I think that deck has a lot of fundamental problems that just make it kind of bad. I mean, and I've had this thought a lot because Blue White Approach is often a good metagame call, but yes, Fundamentally the deck just isn't very good. Like, you're just trying to resolve a 7-mana sorcery that doesn't do anything the first time you cast it.
Yeah, I would be starting with somewhere like Brad's list, though, where you literally don't need Approach in your deck after board.
Sure, and I haven't looked at his list. I did hear that he and BBD and some of the other guys were playing Blue-White Approach, and I was thinking to myself, oh, that's kind of a really cool win condition. It kind of, you know, it's nice against the red-black decks because it gives you an actual way to win.
They're playing 2 Approach the Second Suns and 0 Pull from Tomorrow. They're playing 2 Glimmers instead. Okay. It is Blue-White Control that sometimes wins with Approach.
Interesting. I mean, it is going to make your list worse in every matchup where approach isn't good, though, right? Like, if you're playing the mirror or whatever, it is going to be one less answer that you have.
No, because they just cut pulls. They didn't cut...
Well, pull is something that's way more important than approach to seconds on that, right? Like,
well, sure. Anyway, my point is that the reason that this is where I'm starting is simply because the matchups where approach is good are just as polarizing as the matchups where they're bad, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Decks that can't beat approach to the second sun just aren't beating it. That's not happening.
Right. Yeah, if you play against, like, the Stompy deck or whatever, it's, like, pretty great to have an approach to second sun in your deck.
And because of that, and because, like, one-third of the decks or more are always going to have a bad approach matchup, I'm very willing to play two in my main deck and make that sacrifice in the mirror.
Interesting. So I really like the Esper decks. I mean, I would really like them a lot if I felt like the mana could realistically support disallow Contempt and Settle the Wreckage, but that's just not a real thing that people can do. Like, I've certainly played against that deck before, but I just don't think you're consistently going to get there on that.
Somebody did a deck tech where they basically just were splat. Like, they didn't play Contempt. They played Cast Out, and they just played Cast Down, Fatal Push, Scarab God as their Black Splash.
I am just now starting to wonder, though, if it's actually not Disallow that should be the one on the chopping block in this whole double spell thing. Like, I wonder if we couldn't just play, like, a Settle the Wreckage, Brassica's Contempt deck that's just playing, like, Essence Scatters and Negates and Syncopates or whatever. Instead of trying to get double blue. Yeah. That's interesting. It's an interesting thought. But as far as where I would start, I would definitely start on the Esper Teferi decks. I think that blue-black control, like Mason said, is just, it's really good in the metagame right now. The problem with blue-white is that you're really exploitable by cards like Duress. Like, if your opponent casts a Duress on turn 5, oftentimes you just lose the game through no fault of your own. Like, you're just like, oh, I was holding up the Settle the Wreckage, and now I just lose because, you know, he Duressed it. And you can't exactly, like, you can't even save the negate for it, right? Because you're like, oh, I can either negate or I can settle the Wreckage, and I can't do both.
Right. That makes sense. Snapkeep Arcade says, good to see you back, Matt. Thank you so much. It's funny. We're all kind of in varying places on blue control, which is
where it's probably a good thing for control, right, in this format. Like, it means that it's at least, it's not only viable, but it has a lot of different flavors, different directions.
We talked about how, like, approach can be a metagame deck. We just literally talked about different options that you can do to fix your mana in Esper. I'm glad that none of us are in blue-black. I don't see the appeal of being straight blue-black. Not playing Teferi seems wrong to me. Does anybody else disagree?
No, I think it's actually just not that hard to splash Teferi. Like, I played an Esper mana base with just splashing for Teferi, and I had way more white sources in blue and black than I needed at any given time.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think when it's like you really only need Teferi, and then I think Autumn played Forsake the Worldly in her sideboard. Oh, in Autumn's sideboard, sorry. So, yeah, it's pretty free. Like, free is a strong term, but...
Yeah, the thing is, like, you don't even mind playing the off-color cycling lands, as it were, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are close to free.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool. Well, let's talk about the number one deck. It's not close. Coming in with 69 points, we have Red Black Whirler, as I like to call it, just because that's what the deck is at this point.
Yeah, Owen called it Whirler Control on Twitter. Was that him?
Yeah.
Whirler Control.
Oh, my goodness.
It's pretty good.
So, so the list we have is Owen's. It's got the 3 Hazorettes, 2 Glorybringers, no Karns, 3 Chandra. I don't think most of the pros were playing Karn at this point. This is the boogeyman of the format. People don't like that boogeymans exist. Let's give a simple summary and talk about key cards, and then Matt Kling can go off.
Oh man, I want to talk about Jin's deck again, but yeah, I'll do the simple summary for the deck. You curve out on your opponents, and you try and go 1-drop, 2-drop, 3-drop, use a removal spell, then play a Hazoret, Glorybringer, or a Phoenix, and you kind of take over the game from there. The deck's a mid-range deck. Sometimes an aggro deck sometimes, so when you're starting to play against it, it's hard to know which way they're slanting in their deck. We've seen people play curves with like Bomat Courier or Shikrar Khenra, like Cori Biomaster. We've also seen people play Vraska Contempt in the main deck. So the deck is extremely flexible. It can adjust to anything it's playing against, and post board, it can answer any deck that it can't beat in game one. It's the best deck, and it's just a very good versatile mid range deck that has like an aggressive slant to it, is how I describe it. But
you know what's funny? You just described Green White Tokens.
Did I really? Is that we have a Green White Tokens didn't play Whirly Boy. That's the difference.
did when he was talking, did it not sound like he was talking about Green White Tokens, Matt?
I mean, certainly a little bit, and I mean, for what it's worth, Green White Tokens was like oppressive in its format, and for a lot of the same reasons.
He might have literally just swayed my opinion.
Oh my goodness. I thought you were talking about the tokens deck in Standard now. No, not, I was not so current. Confused. I was like, that deck plays Sacred Cat. I don't understand what I do wrong.
No. Literally, okay, yeah. As you were talking,
it does remind me of that deck. Yeah.
I was having flashbacks to getting Dromoka's Commanded and wanting to flip the table.
It actually upsets me that I can't play this deck because I'm practicing with the RPTQ, because this is the kind of deck I love to play. And it's so powerful. It's absurdly good.
Yeah, it's funny. I think that everyone I know that I trust has ended up on the same opinion that this deck is the trap deck for the RPTQ.
I guess we kind of switched conversation there. So you mean like basically like this is a conversation I want to have too, because it's one of the decks that we are considering over red, because you can play other stuff and you don't lose too much. But why is it such a trap? It seems like it's such a powerful deck. So that's kind of the problem I'm having with the disconnect. It's like, I get that you're taking Duresis from other decks, and you're going to play a slightly weaker deck in your third slot, but this deck is just so powerful.
I would say Duress and Heart of Kieran and Goblin Chain Whirler is just a lot of the most powerful cards in the format to put in one deck.
Mm-hmm.
And that's weird to say that Duress is one of the most powerful cards in the format, but we've come to that point now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it definitely is the RPTQ. We're all talking about how this is going to definitely be a Teferi deck.
I mean, it's not just there, right? Like, Scrap Heap Scrounger goes in multiple decks. Ether Hub can go in multiple decks. It's just
a glutton for good cards. That's what it really comes down to. Like this deck plays mono mythics and rares almost.
Like the deck is honestly just, I mean, it's just too much of what's great in Standard. Every single creature in this deck is a rare or mythic, by the way.
Right.
Like you.
Is a rare.
Yeah, it's like, it's actually just, I mean, even if you're looking at the lands, it's like, you know, the basic lands and then like six burn spells that are not rares or mythics.
and Aether Hub, but.
Right.
I think that it's a trap. I think that you do not lose enough by switching to mono red to play this. That being said, this is the best deck in Standard by a pretty significant margin.
Yeah, if I'm playing an individual event right now, I'm playing black-red. Although, to be fair, I would say I'm actually a little bit... I'm a little bit surprised that we actually chose Owen's deck to feature as the red-black deck, as it were. So this deck is actually just mono-red, mostly. I mean, it's playing two unlicensed in the main, but even the way it plays, right, aside from the three Heart of Cairns, is just like a mono-red deck. Like, he's playing Kari's Evs and Bomat Couriers and...
Would you talk about like Matt Severa's deck list as the featured deck?
Yeah, honestly, I would like a red black deck that felt a little bit more like red black. This deck is like,
is there a red black deck that did well that was not just unlicensed in the main and Scrap Heap Scrounger activations?
What's Severa playing?
Matt Severa was only playing the Scrap Heap Scroungers and the unlicensed.
I think that's fine. What I'm saying is I consider a red black deck more like a Rekindling Phoenix deck rather than a Hazoret deck.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, that's true. You know, Matt Severa was playing the two. I think that Danny Anderson was the next best. He was playing three Phoenix, two Hazoret.
Was Severa playing any Hazorets in his deck? I haven't looked at his list yet.
Matt Severa was playing zero Hazorets in his 75.
Okay.
So, what? That's. I think that that's also an important topic for this deck, right? Is like how. Like, when we say it's good cards.deck, Owen literally wasn't even playing the card that Matt attributes with this deck in his main deck. Like, that's how good and full of good cards this deck is.
Sure. But again, I would consider this mostly mono-red, which I think was, like, an insane metagame call for that tournament. But I would not play this list in an open metagame. I would probably play it going forward because I would expect a lot of, you know, the Pseudomir and other mono red decks. But
where do you think you can gain the biggest edge in the Mir Mechling?
Main deck Heartless Pillage. No, it's probably just
The podcast listeners
did not get the full viewing experience on that one.
Yeah, that was. I was like, all right, sell me on it. Jobs me.
No, it's probably the biggest way to get an edge in the mirror is probably just playing the 25th land for sure, which is seems like something everybody's gotten up to now. And I mean, like. I think Owen's list is pretty great in the mirror. Like, the Hazorettes over Rekindling Phoenix is probably better. I don't think the extra Chandras are very good in the mirror, but the Bowmat Couriers are pretty good, although it looks tough to crew your Heart of Kirin's in this deck.
Did you guys know that there were six 7-1 decks at the PTQ this weekend that were red-black?
I did not know that, no.
That's so many.
Yeah, the deck's so good. That's the thing I don't... All right, I'm still stuck on the RPTQ thing. I was going to talk to you guys after the show, but let's talk on the show. The RPTQ for some people is this weekend. Let's have the conversation. I'm not convinced that green-black is actually that much, like, worth it to actually have as a deck. Like, I think I like green-black snake. I think it's a pretty good deck, but I think it's pretty medium, like we talked about. Like, it's 45% against the field. I don't think it's good against red-black, and I think red-black's a trap. I think if red-black gets a trap, I expect a lot of people to fall for it because I'm willing to fall for it right now. And I think it's not good against blue-white, and I expect those two decks to be there. So I'm super confused. Like, you don't have to tell me what the third deck is, but am I, like, way off base there? Like, because I know, like, the default lineup, if you go red, is, like, you get green-black snake. Like, that's kind of, like...
I don't think you necessarily need to play green-black snake. That certainly wasn't my...
Okay.
That wasn't my plan going with it.
Yeah, you don't have to talk more about that if you don't want to.
Obviously. No, I don't care. I mean, what's the difference? It's RPTQ. But also, I think that... You're taking Duresses out of some deck, regardless, right? Like, you could easily play them in your Esper Teferi deck. And it's not even about that. Like, I want to play Heart of Kirin in my green Stompy deck more than anything.
Oh, so you want to play
Green Stompy. I suppose if you wanted to go with the green deck splashing blue for Commit to Memory, does that deck still play Heart of Kirin?
Yeah, it does not. At least the version we had on screen earlier, I did not think had Heart of Kirin.
Interesting.
It does have negate in the board, but you could obviously do other stuff there. So
right.
Yeah.
I find it hard to believe that you're going to be able to hold up negate often enough to make it matter, except for against specifically Fumigate.
Yeah, I think that's the only place you really want it, right?
Right.
The best finishing Stilly Stompy deck at the Pro Tour had three Heart of Kirin's in it.
Was it playing blue or black?
The blue version is what I meant.
Oh, okay. Sure. So maybe the list we did had on screen. All right. Well, I mean, right. That card is really good. So I'm not surprised there. Yeah, I don't know.
It is a card suck, right? The problem isn't it's that much better. We all know it's that much better.
Yeah.
But the question is, how much are you hurting your other two decks?
Well, I think it's really how much you're hurting the third deck, right? Because the Teferi deck, unless you do Esper, overlaps very little.
Right. But you have to, the whole. It's you. You're putting 370 card decks on the table.
Mm-hmm.
They all have to be. They can't share any cards, right?
Yeah.
So if one deck is monopolizing a huge percentage of those cards, it does hurt the other decks in some way. Mm-hmm. Like, unless you're going straight blue-white here and then straight mono-green here, but you're hurting yourself by going straight mono-green. You might be hurting yourself by going straight blue-white. You know? Mm-hmm. Chris really wants to play mono black. He really likes the deck. He wants to play it at the RPTQ. There are lots of decks that use the cards in this deck, right? Rekindling Phoenix could be used across green red monsters. It could be used across green red dinosaurs, you know, as that default green deck that nobody's talking about that could be a really good option for this tournament, right? We're talking about how good Rekindling Phoenix is. And when if you take Rekindling Phoenix outside of those decks, you can't use them.
Mm-hmm. It's actually an interesting thought for what it's worth. Like, if you played, like, some kind of a green-red Rekindling Phoenix deck, that would actually give you a lot of game versus your mono-red matchups.
Right.
And then the mono-red deck doesn't
now,
actually need
I'm
to play
I'm now just
it.
Giving up. I'm just giving away all the things that me and my team are talking about. But, like, like you are Thanks, Mason.
I said you'd have to talk about it. You could have just deferred.
It's fine. Yeah. I should give it to the podcast listeners.
I mean, I'm going to say, I mean, like, I think, like, currently we're going to play Red Black, a Teferi Sun deck probably, or a Teferi Bant. Deck, and then we're going to play Mono Black. Yeah, we're playing BAM. Almost 100%. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
And then Mono Black. But I don't need, I don't know, I haven't felt like I need to
if I
Are you
if
guys
I pick...
so 100% on Bant approach? That seems really surprising to me.
Well, it's Bant or Blue-White, but leaning Bant. We're anyway, just having issues winning with Bant.
Like, if I picked our decks Blue-White. Tomorrow...
with Blue-White, I misspoke, sorry.
Okay. No, it's fine. Sure. Yeah. If I picked our decks tomorrow, it would be Bant approach, Mono Red, and then whatever Chris wants to play. So, Chris currently wants you to play Mono Black or Blue-Black midrange. I would talk about the ledge if I could, but like... I don't know. I think that red black is a trap. I think that, you know, like, there are very good lineups, right? Like, I think green red dinosaurs or green red. Actually, I think green red dinosaurs is specifically good because it lets you sideboard Glorybringer in mono red, which is really powerful. Although, the thing you have to worry about there is a braids. So, there's all kinds of stuff, man. Like,
yeah, there's a little bit of overlap in a lot of things. That's why I think that honestly, I just think that playing mono red, green black stompy, and whatever kind of Teferi deck you want, it actually doesn't really matter. You can play any Teferi deck with that lineup, and it's just going to be great.
Yeah.
So
I guess right. Really, yeah, I just the green black stompy part. That I mean, it's on me. I understand what you guys are saying, though. I get it.
I just
I
think
understand
that that's
it better
enough,
now.
I think it's enough better than snake or just random. Rogue deck,
yeah.
Because those are really your options, right? Like you're either gonna play red black and a kind of bad snake list, or you're gonna play red black and some rogue deck and then a Teferi deck.
Yeah,
yeah. The green black ramp decks also did pretty well at the Pro Tour. Oh, I didn't include that on the honorable mentions for some reason. They also had three decks that did well.
What did
green black ramp?
Okay.
Green black Hour of Promise.
Sure, yeah, some kind of desert deck, yeah.
For the same reasons that a lot of Karn decks do well, right? It's like all my cards do the same thing. That makes Karn a lot better. So on and so forth.
For what it's worth, I think that the worst matchups that I played against playing black red specifically were against a lot of the green black control decks, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
Like decks that were playing a bunch of planeswalkers and ramp spells in whatever form. Like sometimes it was Severin the Conduit, sometimes it was Hour of Promise, but either way they would play. Karns, Contempts, like I said, like four main deck Eldritch Reborns.
Spicy. All right, yeah, that's it for the training rounds this week. That's the Pro Tour. That's the metagame breakdown. Those are the decks that did well. You even got a little bit of Spencer going off about
his teammates are going to kill him now.
They don't care. Maybe they care. I don't know.
Besides, yours is so far away, you might change too. Mine is this weekend. You have 2 weeks, buddy.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm not worried about it.
Isn't it 3 weeks from now?
Oh, I mean, I don't know when Spencer's is.
It is 3 weeks.
It's okay. 3 weeks from now.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to be with me in 2 weeks, Mason.
I'm so excited for Vegas.
You're going to finally prove to me that you're not Austin Geltz.
You didn't even notice earlier when Matt mentioned how Austin beat him, and I said, I'm beating you that day.
Okay. Just because I don't laugh at your bad jokes doesn't mean I don't hear
it. Now I got
that. That's like it makes
I don't laugh at D-minus jokes, Mason Clark. It doesn't happen.
Oh, now Mason Clark. Whenever it fits your message, I understand how it is. Learning from the president, I see. Well, let's move on.
You can't say that on the podcast.
I didn't say anything. Keep going.
Don't forget to check out the Patreon, patreon.com/ccmtg. If you can become a Patreon, you can help fund me giving out Magic cards. We're currently $2 off of our goal. It changes every day. We're averaging about $400 per month. That's the goal, to give out magical cards on Card of the Week. We go between $400 and $500 every month for the last 3 months. So check it out, patreon.com/ccmtg. Help us hit our next goal. Super excited to have Matt here. I also gave everybody on the podcast, we're getting rid of the paying them with the Patreon money, and they're already getting paid. So love you guys. Happy to have you all. And much love. Much love. Where to find us? So you can find me on Twitter, @SpencerH. You can find Matt at The Witch Cling. You can find Mason at Mason E. Clark. You can find the podcast on mtgcast.com, constructorcriticism.com, and on YouTube and the Mana Base. You can join the conversation on Twitter and Facebook. You can join the Facebook group on the Constructive Critics group if you're a patron of $5 or more. Or you can just join the Constructive Criticism family where all the other listeners hang out. You can join the Discord that's been a little bit quiet lately, so I'll be trying to make that more active again. You can join the clan by messaging me at Spencer13Dev or Quentin at Earthstripe, that's URTHSTYRPE on the MTGO. Or you can tweet us with hashtag Would That Be Good. Hashtag Would That Be Good is our Twitter outreach program. If you tweet it, Mason will read it.
First up, we have Spencer Howland tweeting, "Lock it in. Bronze Poe the Witch Clang, never heard of him, will be returning as a permanent co-host for CCMTG. Hashtag Would That Be Good." It's pretty great.
Dude, you crushed it this episode, Matt.
Thanks. I mean, I'm trying.
There you go.
I think I could be better.
Yeah, that's always true, though. How do you feel? Was it fun?
Yeah, it was a good time. Definitely enjoyed it.
Okay. What's next?
Adrian tweets, "Weekend looking bright. Great game one of the NBA finals leading into the PT. Hashtag Would That Be Good." I watched that game. I was a part of the sports ball.
I don't know the game was great until the last 4 seconds.
Yeah, if you like refs like deciding the game because they're getting money under the table, look how involved I am.
So here's the thing, is that definitely was a charge. And then that charge was then followed by the dumbest play I've seen in basketball and the second dumbest play I've ever seen in sports. Like, the dumbest play I've ever seen in sports, go look at the fake punt by the Indianapolis Colts against the Patriots. It's actually the worst thing I've ever seen. But this is a close second.
Are we talking about where he, like, ran the wrong way?
Are you talking about J.R. Smith?
Yeah.
Not even ran the wrong way. Purposely ran the clock out during a tight game.
Yeah.
I do like that LeBron didn't throw him under the bus, though, during the interviews. That was cool.
He looked like he was going to murder him on the court, though.
He did look like he was going to kill him. He made a great meme. I love that meme. It's so good.
Yeah, I was going to look for some memes of that, because his facial expressions were just the best thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. Adrian tweets again, "That goal made my heart flutter. Hashtag Stanley Cup Finals is the best postseason event in sports. Don't at me. Hashtag Would That Be Good."
I added him.
I feel like that's just rude. He specifically said, "Don't at me."
Are they still playing the finals for hockey?
What?
Are they still in the finals right now?
Yeah, it happens at the same time as the NBA Finals.
Okay, I just didn't know if. I mean, I know that the.
Before we jumped on, the Capitals were up 3-0.
Okay.
In the game, which is like a lot of goals for those who don't speak hockey. Alex Ovechkin is like very, very, very good. Yeah, they won 6-2, which is like a pretty big blowout.
Oh, I think we just had the Twitch chat is telling us spoilers about the hockey, but I don't want to say it in case someone has their game DVR'd.
Well, I already said it. I just said who won.
I literally don't know who's in the Stanley Cup Finals.
So, you know, hopefully they.
Hold on, Mason. You don't know who's in the Stanley Cup Finals, do you?
The Vegas people, because KYT tweets about it.
To be fair, I didn't know until in Richmond when we were getting an Uber from somewhere, and our driver was a big Capitals fan. So
this actually kind of sucks. This is good and bad for us. So it's good for us because had the series gone long, the Stanley Cup Finals would have been in Vegas while we were there.
Oh, that would be crazy.
However, since it looks like it's going to be a 5-1 to the Capitals, or a 4-1 to the Capitals, it will not be in Vegas while we're there.
Gotcha. Well, so, I'm going to let it be known
It's not 4-1 yet, right? They're up 3-1 right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Nashville goes crazy for the Predators, but as soon as they're out, we all stop talking about hockey, so I only know it as long as the Predators are involved.
I like that you said, like, you attacked me about hockey, like, a week ago.
Yeah, I did.
And you literally don't know the name of the Vegas team.
Yeah, but I know the Predators. I gotta show pride for one sport. I've chosen the Predators. It's such a cool mascot. Look at the Titans. It's the letter T with some flames. Terrible. The Predators is like a skull. That thing's awesome. Go Predators. Woo! All right. Adam Spain tweets, "Looks like my podcast episodes and the aftermath of PT are going to be the toxicity of band culture. Hashtag Would That Be Good."
So I don't know if that's his podcast feed or his podcast personally. I didn't know that if Adam had a podcast, if he does.
I think
it looks like feed. I think it's homewardpath.blogspot.com. Check it out.
Yeah, that makes sense with this Twitter handle now. It all comes together. Sorry, Adam, I just figured it out, too.
But I hope that people respect the fact that we didn't talk about ban culture or participate in it. The Wyatt Darby fan club, hashtag would that be good, that is all. Fun fact, you want to listen to next week's episode if you're a part of the Wyatt Darby fan club.
Oh, I get it. Jason Murphy tweeted, voting Republican.
No.
I realized as I was saying it.
We're not reading this.
I honestly didn't even read it. I realized as I was saying it. Adrian tweets, the Warriors tonight reminded me of the way Wyatt Darby got through the top eight. Hashtag splash. Hashtag get the job done. Hashtag would that be good?
You know, here's the thing about the Warriors. Is if Green was not on that team, I would root for them so hard. They're so fun to watch. They're like, you want to root for Durant. He's like a good guy. You want to root for Steph. You want to root for the whole thing. It's like a feel good story. And then you watch Green be a jerk, and you just hate him.
So I actually agree with everything you just said, and I basically never watch basketball, but I watched the first game of the finals this year, and I was just like, man, this is the worst person I've ever seen in any sport ever. And I liked the Warriors before that. And now I'm like definitely a Cavs fan for this series.
Because he's so ridiculous. It sucks. It sucks. Don't you dare compare Wyatt to the freaking Cavs that have Green on them. No, honestly, shout out to Wyatt. Shout out to all of our listeners. Matt Kling, what did you learn this week?
Well, I would say the biggest thing I learned was I should trust my instincts more when metagaming for a PT and don't just assume that because it's a pro tour that other people are going to have better information than what I have. I'm usually pretty good at knowing what a metagame is going to be and like figuring out what the best deck to play at a given tournament is, and just don't sell myself short in that respect.
I'm not going to lie. I didn't know that my bath tweet did not have hashtag with that but good on it. I'll have to fix that for next time.
Well, let's say it. Spencer now officially, anytime he's in a bath, or it might even expand to showers at this point. Who knows? He sends me a picture and then says something like, getting ready for tonight's episode, or how you doing, bud? Or did you see the newest episode of 13 Reasons Why? Or blah, blah, blah. So it's kind of official. What kind of a thing? Hashtag Devonair.
What did you learn this week, Mason?
I got to get your guys' insight on, or a better understanding of your insight behind the Red Black the Trap thing. That was pretty helpful. And I just got to hear both y'all's opinions and thoughts about the metagame at large. And I find that's only really helpful with me going forward. And just, it's good to get other people's views, especially people that I like trust and get to actually communicate back to. So I just learned a lot today, just a lot about the metagame as a whole.
I learned that if you post the same meme twice, people will call you out on it.
That's true. That's funny.
And I also learned that Mason doesn't know anything about Lord of the Rings.
Oh, hang on. So, that's not true. I didn't know what that scene. Did I get that right? Was I right about that?
No, you were way off.
Could have gone either way. 50-50.
I don't know what this is in regards to.
I posted a meme, the Return of the Kling meme.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
You want me to tag you in it?
If you'd like to, sure.
All right.
Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you guys all next week.
See ya.